listening to the Survival in Motion podcast. Learn, adapt, prepare, survive.
Hello, chickens. And hello to everybody else. Welcome to another episode of the Survival in Motion podcast. This is author Cal Wilson. I'm here in our chicken coop. And I thought I would record an episode on what has worked so far with our preps. And I just want to say, this is not meant to be bragging, and I'm not enjoying this quarantine at all. I know. This episode is meant to be educational. It's not meant to be bragging. And one of the things that happened right as this all started was there was a big run on toilet paper and some groceries out there, including eggs. But neither of those were an issue for us because we had stocked up on toilet paper and we have a chicken coop here. Fresh eggs actually do taste a lot better than store-bought eggs. And depending on the age of the egg, sometimes there's just no comparison. So, I know. Okay. That was our one rooster here. Anyway, most of our preps worked. And I'd like to refer you to my two nonfiction books on the subject, Dirt Cheap Valuable Prepping and Dirt Cheap Valuable Survival Retreat. Those books will give you more information. Like I said, most of our preps worked. There's some things that did not work, and I have a list going of things I wish I had done better this time around, and I'm going to talk about that in the next episode. And by the way, some issues have come up. If you're interested in learning how to homeschool your kids and you don't even know where to start, check out Survival in Motion episode 14. Also, if you're interested in exploring the possibility of owning a gun, check out episode 11. Some people have asked me, and they've said, I don't even know where to start. Episode 11. So anyway, like I said, I'm not enjoying this. Most of our preps worked. And this is the part that really has me mad, besides this rooster being so vocal. People with secure paychecks are telling the rest of us to stay at home and go broke. That seems to be a consistent theme here. It's kind of the haves and the have-nots in that respect. And I can't wait till we get through this and get done with this. And I can't wait till this is all over with. But that's the part that has me pretty mad, actually, is people with a government paycheck or some kind of secure paycheck are just telling the rest of us, your jobs are not essential, so you just stay at home and go broke and not complain about it. That's the part that has me mad. The two things I'm watching for to get through this or not are, number one, if there's any news of bank problems, and number two, if there's a sudden rash of crimes involving armed robberies. I mean, the jails are emptying out, so there's not much of a disincentive for a crime. I'm talking about going into stores or robbing stores of food or going to a neighbor and stealing food there and at gunpoint. You know, those are two things that kind of have me nervous as I'm watching the news. And by the way, watching the news, it's kind of a downer. I've noticed there have been some days that go by that I'm not watching the news and I go to bed and I actually have a decent night's sleep, as opposed to watching the news, getting all worked up and then trying to go to bed. So watching the news can elevate your blood pressure and make it harder to go to bed. Anyway, back to the episode here. I'm going to be talking about our chicken coop today. Like I said, eggs are better when they come from your own chicken coop. And the chicken poop is actually really good fertilizer, so long as it's not brand new. You kind of need to let it dry out a little bit. Then you can shovel it up and put it into your garden. And it's very rich in the nutrients that makes for good soil. Chickens can be trained to become kind of friendly and hop up in your lap and let you pet them. I don't think they can become pets, though. They cannot be house trained. We had a neighbor a few years ago who gave that a try, and it was kind of a mess. And their poop, it smells terrible. And a bunch of chicken poop in your house is just a very ugly thing. But they can be friendly. And through the years, we've had different chickens who we've trained to jump up in our lap and let us pet them. Before you get a chicken, like I was saying, before you get a chicken coop, check with the local rules and HOA rules. It might be legal where you live, and you might be surprised. So check on the website for the local county and local rules that apply to you or where you live. There might be rules, hens versus roosters, and as you can tell, right on time, roosters can be pretty loud. A hen is a female that lays eggs. A rooster does not lay eggs and just makes a lot of noise, supposedly protects the hens, but what that translates to is when a predator comes along, a rooster gets in the front of the line to be killed and doesn't really protect anything. It's just kind of like that scene in Life of Brian, the Suicide Squad, you know. So I'm skeptical about the value of roosters. This one here might be dispatched before too long if it's this loud all the time. There might be rules in your local jurisdiction about how many hens you can have. Most of the times they say no roosters allowed, no more than three or four hens or something like that. I haven't noticed that freshly slaughtered chickens taste any better than what you could get at Safeway or a grocery store. I think it's something that you need to know how to do, but I don't think it's a great idea to raise chickens to slaughter, but it's always a possibility. See, those are hens that are not roosters. They can be loud too, not nearly as loud as roosters. I'm looking at our rooster. Here he comes. Here comes another cock-a-doodle-doo. Anyway, I do think knowing how to slaughter a chicken is something you need to know how to do, and I have in the past, but I don't think it tastes any better. Like I said, roosters are too noisy. Neighbors might not like the noise, even if you just have three or four hens. Let's see, right now we have six hens. One, two, three, four. Yeah, six hens. Sometimes they make enough noise that the neighbors are annoyed. And in that case, it's a good idea to just give them some free eggs. Just like having a beehive, when you give them some free honey, giving free eggs to the neighbors might mean that they not mind the noises so much. As far as a chicken coop, I think it's good to have a bigger one so that they get more space to walk around. Problem is, predators can dig underneath, and so you need to line it with big boulders or chicken netting underneath to make sure nothing can dig underneath. We had a fox that dug underneath and got into our chicken coop. Foxes, unlike other predators, they just start killing. They're content to kill the whole flock. So the other predators might be raccoons, skunks. In our case, it's a dog kennel. And it's big enough so they can walk around and they kind of get some exercise. But it's got to be secure. And something's got to be over the top of it, too. Otherwise, an eagle or hawks will come down and start eating your chickens. Regarding predators, like I said, foxes, bobcats, raccoons, skunks. We had a possum once. That was amusing because they're so slow. And it might be a good idea to have a live trap out there. A live trap is kind of a big shoebox-sized trap that has a trap door, and you put some bait in there. And we've caught all sorts of things in our live traps. You got to keep it legal. Check the local laws as far as what to do after you get a trapped animal. For a few years there, we would just pull out the .22 and kill it. It's also possible to fill up kind of a basin with water and just drown the thing. But anyway, predators will come. Chicken feed. They need to be fed once a day at least. You can buy chicken feed at Tractor Supply or online, or you might have a animal supply store in your neighborhood. I think that the pellets are best. There's a choice between chicken feed pellets versus kind of a sand. They call it scratch. I don't think that's a good thing. See, that's a hen there. Every once in a while, they lay an egg, and then they'll squawk a little bit, kind of like they're bragging. Chicken feed can sometimes be fortified with vitamins and fortified with calcium to make their eggs stronger. And what you're looking for is layer feed, L-A-Y-E-R. as far as water, they've got to be able to drink water all the time. There's kind of a fancy contraption where you hook up your hose to this basin, like in the back of a toilet. You know, it figures out how much water is in there. And then if it's too low, it'll fill it back up. That's kind of complicated. One thing we've noticed, that it's okay to just have a big water bowl and have a hose go into it and just turn it on ever so slightly. So there's always overflowing just a little bit. That's how we do it. Oh, as far as what to lay, laying boxes, a chicken laying an egg kind of wants a little privacy. So those dairy crates that you can get from a supermarket, you can just kind of lay them on their side. The chickens like that. What we've done is bought about 5 5-gallon buckets, screwed them into a 2x6, just laid them on their side. And chickens like that. They need something to perch on at night. And for that, we've gotten some dowel rods, like in a closet. You can buy those at Home Depot and just kind of poke them through the side of the cage so that it's kind of on every corner, there's a perching rod. And that's what they sleep on. Oh, you have to pick up your eggs daily or else the chickens themselves will start eating them. What kind of chickens? Buff Orpingtons are my favorite. They're kind of big and yellow, kind of blonde. They lay big eggs. There are a whole bunch of different types of chickens. Some of them are kind of funny looking. There's one we used to have. It was kind of a blonde looking chicken with a whole bunch of feathers on its feet, and it looked like kind of bell bottoms. The only type of chicken I don't like is the Rhode Island Red, only because they're kind of mean. We would come in and feed the chickens, and this one Rhode Island Red just had a vendetta for us. And through the years, I've noticed Rhode Island Red chickens are just aggressive. But here's another thing. I've heard that some artsy-fartsy restaurants like to serve eggs that are really small. So it's possible to find a type of a chicken, I think they're called banties, that they will lay extremely small eggs. And you might be able to sell those to a local restaurant. So that's something to keep in mind. Here's a great website, murrayhatchery.com. Everything you need to know about having a home chicken coop, you can find out in that website, murrayhatchery.com. And they can also sell you baby chicks and ship them to you. And it's always kind of funny when the postman comes up and says, here, sign here. Here's a box, and I'm hearing some some little chicks in there. At times, we will buy like 8 or 10 at a time. A couple of them will be dead, but it's still kind of interesting. I didn't know this was possible, but they can mail you little baby chicks in the mail, and then you put them out in your chicken coop. Make sure that they can't get out from the kenneling. Otherwise, they'll just walk right out, and then there's a predator right there at the toast. There are some magazines I wanted to share with you that I can't say I've read, but I know from hearing other customers at Tractor Supply, these magazines are helpful. Hobby Farms magazine, Healthy Hens magazine, and Backyard Poultry magazine. Again, it's Hobby Farms magazine, Healthy Hens magazine, and Backyard Poultry magazine, as well as McMurrayHatchery.com. Okay, okay. I think she just laid an egg. Okay. Celebration time. Okay, okay. So that's the thing about chicken coops. I would encourage you to look into that. It's kind of fun, and chickens can be not pets, but you can grab them and kind of pet them and show them off to your kids, and it's a fun thing. And the eggs are very good. The eggs that they lay are a whole lot better than grocery store eggs. Anyway, I'm going to sign off here, and then I'll record from one of our containers on our survival retreat property and talk to you about what we've been doing there. So I'm signing off for now. Okay, I'm back. A couple of things I forgot to mention about chickens is you need to keep them out of the rain. So when you build a chicken coop, make sure there's a top on it so that at least some of the time they can not be rained on when it's raining. Also, chickens have a pretty good ability to stay warm. And they're surrounded by down, but I wouldn't push it. So if you live in the climate that gets down to 0 to 20 degrees or so, might be a good idea to have the chicken coop right next to your house or something so that some of the warmth from your house can go into the chicken coop. Or, and you have to be very careful about this, you can string an electrical cord out there and have a heating bulb when it gets really, really cold. But you got to be extremely careful because that might turn into a fire hazard. So be careful about that. I wanted to mention roosters. They're a little bit more useful than I mentioned first time around here. They will fertilize the eggs that your chickens hatch, and you won't notice a difference when you eat the eggs if you eat them within, I don't know, a week or two. But a fertilized egg can obviously hatch into a little chick. And there's a company that makes this great incubator out there called Brinsea, B-R-I-N-S-E-A. If you get up to 7 eggs that have been fertilized, you can use this incubator and give it about 3 weeks. And this incubator will keep it slightly warmer and will turn over the eggs, which is what they need. And it will keep it a little bit humid inside there. But that's really a big deal to hatch your own eggs. That's really cool. And if you have kids who want to bring their friends over, or if you're homeschooling, you can bring over the whole neighborhood homeschooling kids. And it's really cool. And the kids just love it. See what happens after about 3 weeks or so. You start hearing some cheep, cheep, you know, from inside the egg. And then you turn off the incubator. And then slowly but surely, the chick inside will kind of chop their way out of the egg. Anyway, kids just love this. The problem is, a lot of times you wind up with a rooster, and roosters are not that helpful for a chicken coop. But anyway, it's something to keep in mind. And certainly it's a way to keep your own flock, keeping it going. I have not tried raising turkeys or geese, so I don't have anything to say about those. But ducks, we tried once, and they are extremely loud, and they need a kiddie pool. Their eggs are huge, though. So I don't know. I'm stuck with chickens, and I'm fine with that. Oh, also, one thing about having a chicken coop, if you ever have leftover scraps from your own kitchen, you can bring them out to the chicken coop and dump them out there, and the chickens are fine with it. There's also a movie theater we go to that you can buy this jumbo container of popcorn, and then when you're done with that, then you can refill it for free and then bring that home. And we do that a lot. Whenever we go see a movie, then we come home with a refilled jumbo container of popcorn and we give that to the chickens. They love it. All right. So I came out to our survival retreat here, and I thought I'd walk into one of the two shipping containers we have. And these are 40 feet long. We have two of them. They're kind of heading into the hill. We've got trees hanging over so they don't get the direct sun. And it's extremely important to get these that are pretty airtight. That way you don't have to worry about mice or rats getting in. And we found a couple of shipping containers that were really airtight. I've never seen any rat or mice poop inside here. So here I'm walking into the 40-foot long container. We've got these industrial racks is what they're called. You get these $150 a piece at Costco. It's basically 4 shelves, and they are extremely heavy duty, and they're long enough so they can also double as bunk beds. So we've got 6 of these, and every one of these has 4 shelves. And it's more than 6 feet long, so somebody like me can get on top of here. Won't be comfortable unless you have some kind of padding, but these shelves can double as bunk beds. Here at our survival retreat, we have, I don't know, I'm just ballparking it, at least 5 years worth of toilet paper. As I walk in here, we've got tons of Mountain House food. Emergency Essentials has a big sale once in the fall and once in the spring, where you can buy a whole carton of these number 10 cans of Mountain House freeze-dried food. And the shelf life for Mountain House is about 35 years. A lot of these, I'm looking at them. There's one from 2013, one from 2015. Let me see. Here's, I think this one is from 2011. But anyway, we've got these boxes. Each box has 6 of the cans of number 10 size cans. Mountain House, I think I'm the only one who really, really likes Mountain House. Everyone else says, oh, that's kind of bland. So I've got a bunch of 5-gallon buckets along in here too. Here's a 5-gallon bucket with spices. And let me open this up. Like I said, Mountain House I think is great, but everyone else needs spice. There's garlic salt, there's granulated salt, granulated garlic, Creole seasoning, salt and pepper. Here's steak sauce, another steak sauce. Here's some more salt and pepper. Here's some spike. All of this stuff is meant to be used on camping food. Not only Mountain House, but a lot of it comes out kind of bland. So that's one bucket. Okay, that's another thing. What I do is a lot of hardware stores sell these 5-gallon buckets. You know, Home Depot, for example, there's this orange, which I don't like. So I found another hardware store that sells this 5-gallon bucket in green. The top is it's called a Gamma Seal lid. It's where you can twist it and it'll come off, and then you can twist it back clockwise and it'll shut. It's called a Gamma Seal lid. So I buy that and get the Gamma Seal lid, and I put duct tape, or in my case, I get glow-in-the-dark duct tape, put that along the front, and then write with a Sharpie the container, the contents of this bucket. Here's one. It's MREs, which are kind of pricey, about $10 a meal. But let me see what's in here. Emergency Essentials sells a lot of MREs. This is a regular lid. Granola breakfast. Here's some mainstay emergency bars. Here's looks like a bunch of peanut butter. And it looks like a spaghetti meal. So that's in that bucket. Lots of 5-gallon buckets around here. Lots of containers of Mountain House. Let me look in here. Mountain House envelopes. Okay. When you go to Walmart, go over to the camping section and you find these Mountain House envelopes. These are maybe about $6 or $7 a piece. I think they taste good. Spaghetti with meat sauce. Here's another spaghetti. Here's lasagna. Here's a breakfast skillet. New Orleans style rice with shrimp and ham. And if you have one of these buckets and kind of leave it by your front door as you leave for work during the day, what I've done is during the work day, that reminds me to pick up one on the way home. And then as the years go by, fill up a bucket like that. Here's another 5-gallon bucket with, it's just called nausea/AD. And it's a bunch of anti-diarrhea drugs. Here's Gas-X, something from Costco, anti-diarrhea. Nausine chewables. Here's generic Pepto-Bismol. And let me close this again. So it's good to have all this stuff around. Let me just take a look and just tell you what I'm looking at. Whole egg powder on this shelf. Here's free-dried salmon, pork chops, dry milk, a whole bunch of sugar, which has a really long shelf life. This is in its own CNH container. Pink. I've got a bunch of salt over here. There's some butter in a can. It's called Red Feather Butter, I think it's called. Freeze-dried coffee. Here's some more spaghetti. Mixed vegetable stew. Beef brisket. Freeze-dried tomatoes. Beef brisket. Like I said, all this is Mountain House. And on this side, we got more like Ziploc. We got Reynolds Wrap aluminum foil. Cleaning stuff. We got a bunch of Lysol here. More Ziploc. More Mountain House. It looks like a couple decades older. Green peas, diced beef. Potatoes with beef and onions, more Lysol. Anyway, I think all this is good to have. Here we've got another container without a lid. For some reason, it's got more anti-diarrhea stuff, Band-Aids, fungus stuff. I wrote about that in my book, Dirt Cheap, Valuable Prepping, how I think that's going to be valuable. It's good to have all this stuff. I don't think we'll need it, but, I mean, we're good to go if need be. So, yeah, like I said, these shelving units are 4 shelves per, and they're $150 each at Costco. They're great. They last forever. They're sturdy. So I just wanted to kind of go through here. and just show you, just kind of walk around here. Then we've got another shipping container next to this. Like I said, they're 40 feet long. I talked about these in my book, Dirt Cheap Valuable Survival Retreat, what to look for, how to get them. It's important that they be sealed tight. It's kind of a hassle to close it, but it's so tight that rats and mice cannot get in, which is important. Oh, here's a bunch of blankets. Okay, here's the padding if you ever need to sleep on one of these. Got some sleeping bags, got some beef broth and chicken broth. Anyway, it just goes on and on. All right, if you want to get started with this stuff, the only thing I would recommend is just, it's okay to start small. Buy a 5-gallon bucket, go on Amazon, buy a Gamma Seal lid. I think they're about $10. So between the two of these, it's $15. And then put some duct tape or glow-in-the-dark duct tape and write on there what you have inside the bucket. And then just slowly start adding to it. You know, we got some water filtration over here. We got some cooking utensils. We got a Berkey. We do have some bottled water in here, but I think more important is the water filtration. So we have, here's a Goal Zero. We've got a Berkey water purification stainless steel thing. It's kind of a big tube that sits on your table. You fill it up with river water or stream water, and then there's a spigot at the bottom, and it filters it out really good. I think bottled water is okay, but the water filtration thing is more important. So anyway, that's the inside of this. And there's no better time than to start right now on this so that you can have all this in case you need it. So that's why my family is in good shape. Between all the toilet paper, and that was just to start, we've got two containers filled with food. And like I said, I'm probably Mountain House's biggest fan, but it does need spices. In closing, I'd like to say that I think in this virus, we're kind of going through a DDT type hysteria. And let me explain that. DDT was a chemical that was used for many years to kill insects. And somebody wrote a book, Carson, I think her name was, and came out and claimed that it was killing all sorts of things besides mosquitoes. And so it started getting banned. And as it got banned, then the deaths from malaria picked up. So it's kind of one of these political things where if DDT wasn't banned, you'd have thousands and thousands of fewer people dying from malaria every year. But it's politically correct to talk about DDT as being so horrible. Similar with this drug, hydroxychloroquine and chloroquine, both of which are used against malaria. What happened was, at some point in March, I think, some doctor in France, in Marseille, started noticing people dying from this virus and started thinking, well, what are they dying from? What are the symptoms that are killing these people? So he put two and two together and decided to start treating these people who came down with the virus with hydroxychloroquine and azithromycin, which is an antibiotic usually used for pneumonia. Now, between those two, he had amazing success in keeping people alive. And there were several other videos from other doctors around the world saying, yeah, I'm using this. I don't think they ever credited the doctor before them, but there's a doctor in Brooklyn, New York. There's a doctor I saw in LA. Basically, they said, I'm treating people who come down with this virus with hydroxychloroquine and azithromycin. One of them threw in zinc, which is helpful. That's why Zicam is so great. When you come down with a cold, you take a bunch of Zicam and that gives you a lot of zinc. That helps your cells get protected from an invasion of a virus. That's what zinc does. So between those three things, hydroxychloroquine, azithromycin, and zinc, people are surviving this thing. And it's like night and day. I'll have links in the show notes. But one guy in Florida said that he had this virus and the symptoms were so bad, he just knew he was going to die within the next day or two. So he started calling around his friends, saying his goodbyes. And one of his friends, I think, hung up and then heard about hydroxychloroquine and texted the dying guy back. Said, hey, ask your doctor about this. So he did. The doctor said, yeah, okay, well, what do we have to lose? So the guy was getting hydroxychloroquine and azithromycin and survived. And almost 8 hours after taking these drugs, he started feeling just magically a lot better. So far, so good, right? You'd think, okay, well, what's the big deal? I mean, anybody who gets sick from this, if they go into the hospital, just ask your doctor for this treatment. And doctors, I get the impression they're working 60-hour weeks or 80-hour weeks. They don't turn on the news all the time, so they might not know. I don't know. And hydroxychloroquine has been around for decades, so no drug company has a patent on it, and nobody's making a ton of money off of it. It's like a dollar a pill, so it's really inexpensive. So far, so good, right? No big deal. Then President Trump mentions it, and he must have been watching some of the videos that I've been watching where doctors just say, yeah, I give this stuff and my patients live. Now it's become a political issue. And the mainstream media, I didn't think it was possible for them to sink more in esteem, as far as I'm concerned, than they have done here. It's like there's a jihad against hydroxychloroquine only because President Trump talked about how great it was. And he wasn't saying, here, take this pill. He was saying, ask your doctor about it. It needs a prescription. So anyway, I think this is invidious of the media trying to keep people ignorant of this drug, this treatment, in hopes that Donald Trump won't get some credit. It's like I said last time, a lot of us listening to this don't understand this, but a lot of these Trump haters, that's what gets them out of bed in the morning. That's what they think. Maybe today I can do or say something that will damage Donald Trump. It's crazy. But that's what we're left with. We've got a very effective, inexpensive treatment for this virus. And I'm going to put a bunch of links in the show notes so you can see for yourself. But it's become a political issue because the mainstream media doesn't want anybody to get healed by this because it was promoted by Donald Trump. Can you try to wrap your mind around that? It's crazy. So that's why I'm comparing it to DDT. It's kind of a political issue that has resulted, or it could result, in the deaths of many people. That's what we're living through now. As bizarre as it is, people are in hospitals with this virus dying of it, even though there's this great treatment out there. So there you have it. I wanted to go through at least one of our shipping containers and talk about what we've accumulated as far as preps. And I wanted to go record a podcast episode, or at least part of one, from the inside of our chicken coop. I think that's a really fun hobby. When it all boils down to it, the eggs are good, but it's kind of fun. And it's a great way to meet neighbors. If you have a situation where you can have a chicken coop kind of in front of your house, you know, as the neighbors go on their walks down the street, you can pull out a chicken and say, hey, would you like to pet my chicken? That kind of thing. It's kind of fun. And, you know, I don't think I've ever done a podcast out here at our survival retreat. This is nice out here, over 50 acres, and it's quiet and peaceful, and it's a nice view. I talked about how to find big pieces of vacant land in my book, A Dirt Cheap Valuable Survival Retreat. There are some websites out there that specialize in vacant land. You know, it's strategic and it's defensible. There's a creek running through our property. It's a good survival retreat. But the main thing is, you hear that? He asked rhetorically. Nothing. That's the point. There's nothing to hear. It's totally quiet out here. I'll drive around all day in the city in a concrete jungle with cars all around me honking and going in business meetings with people yelling. And I come out onto this quiet, peaceful property, and it's just great. It's totally peaceful. It's nice. All right. So like I said at the beginning of this podcast, I'm not here to brag, and I don't consider myself the most prepared person out there. I'd consider myself maybe like advanced intermediate. And I know that there are a number of things that went right, some of which I talked about in this podcast, but there are a lot of things that have gone wrong. There are a lot of preps that I have not done that I wish I had. And that will probably be the next episode in this podcast. You know, things that didn't go right, or preps I didn't, but I should have done, or whatever. You know, my attitude is I'm just all ears. If there's something I'm doing that I'm not doing right, I'd like to hear about it. And I'd like to exchange ideas. And if there are other people out there who have better ideas, let's hear them. I think that's what this podcast and my two nonfiction books are all about. Anyway, I hope you consider putting up a chicken coop, assuming it's legal where you are, and I advise you to follow the rules, of course, and start small on your preps. That's how I started, you know, just filling up 5-gallon buckets here and there, whether it's over-the-counter medication, whether it's MREs, whether it's Mountain House food, whether it's spices, a bunch of Band-Aids like we have, and, you know, a place where you can bug out and live and defend yourself. As this crisis goes on, I think prepping is becoming more mainstream, and I think that's about time. 150 years ago, everybody was a prepper. Of course, they didn't call it that. You do what you have to do to survive. And so that's what I think we might have ahead of us after all this stupidity gets behind us, assuming it ever does. I mean, it's, well, this is off topic here, but as the testing for antibodies comes out, I think we're going to find out more and more and more of us have already had this and haven't had any symptoms, which means that the mortality rate is very low. So what the hell were we doing shutting everything down? It's kind of frustrating. And like I said, it's people with secure paychecks telling the rest of us, stay at home, go broke. If you have a business, just shut it down. If you have employees, lay them off and don't complain about it. That's my feeling of what's going on here. It's stupid. So I hope we get beyond all this really soon. But the silver lining here is that it's teaching people to be more self-sufficient and more survival-oriented and less dependent on the outside world. And I'm not talking about just government. I'm just talking about society in general, that you need to survive on your own. I think we're off to a good start. We're far from perfect here, definitely. Anyway, I hope you found this episode of the Survival in Motion podcast entertaining and informative, and I hope you learned something from it. And again, I'm not here to brag. Anyway, I hear the music. That means our time is up. Thank you for joining me. God bless.